So you may have seen me here the last couple of years if you've been here, and I've been giving some pretty deeply technical talks, and sitting out, you know, seeing these faces sitting, staring back at me going, I have no idea what you're talking about, and this little cluster of developers here going, cool, I'm going to talk to you about this afterwards. So I decided to come and talk from the other side of my job, which I've spent a lot more time with lately, and that is helping out customers do deployments and telling them where they went wrong. So this is basically the network that we're deploying in a school system in the UK. This is actually drawn by the IGS, the IBM Global Services chief architect on the solution. You can find this on ratemynetworkdiagram.com. And it's a rough estimate of what we're doing at this customer. So it's a school system for an entire county in the UK. One of the characteristics about it is that they don't run everything out of one data center and have everything connected by the network so much. Most of the file servers are going to be actually at the local schools because they need to make sure that everything's working right there. The schools vary in size from about 200 to 1,600 users, which would be students and teachers, primarily students, clearly. The total deployment, when it's done, will be roughly 300,000 users, 400 sites, and that would be 400 separate Samba domains. There is some centralized management. They do have a data center, and mostly what they do at the data center is, big brother stuff. Find out what all the students are doing, what all the teachers are doing, and making sure that they don't mess up their systems. There is a little bit of localized management that goes on, but most of the tasks, like creating users, will happen back at the data center. That they want to make sure they go through all the proper processes. But there'll be some tasks locally, like resetting passwords, that'll have to go on, or adding shares. So one of the requirements, that most of us had to work with is they have to be able to support Windows desktops. These desktops are fairly well locked down. They're paranoid about students going and doing subversive activities. Surprisingly, I thought that was only a U.S. thing, but it seems to be spreading into other countries too. The students are allowed to log on, but their desktops are locked down to where they really can't install anything. Most of them don't have floppy drives in them. They don't have the ability to write to the local drives in many cases. So everything has to go through these servers. They are basically the number one thing that they need to do, that the end users need to do, is just share files or look on the web, maybe watch some streaming media through for educational purposes, hopefully. And the way they enforce that is through web content filtering. And to speed all this up, they want to be able to proxy it and cache a lot of the stuff locally on these appliances. Some of the boundaries we had to work within is that we have to deal with the fact that they've got hardware locally, but they do have some of the centralized stuff. And so we have to make sure anything we do that requires communication between the two, just that they be aware of each other. There are also some proprietary software packages that are in there, and they're not leaving. They use IBM WebSphere. They use IBM Tivoli Management Suite to actually monitor the hardware and do a lot of the deployments. One of the issues that if you're an IBM customer, you can get support for Linux distributions, for specific Linux distributions, and the software that's contained within those. If you go beyond that software that's on that distribution, IBM is not going to support you through a standard contract. And so they wanted to avoid that as much as possible, as most of our customers do. So we had to try to stick with whatever was there. A lot of the stuff that John and Bill talked about building the latest version of Samba or the latest version of OpenLDAP, we did not have that option in general at this customer. We did sometimes have to go outside of that scope, but most of it was done using just what was on the distros. Probably the biggest problem that they've got is, they're a school system, so they don't have a lot of money, and they can't afford to pay for very good WAN, so they can't really rely on connectivity back to the data center. So we couldn't have anything that relied on them going back to the data center, say even to reset a password. they just wouldn't be able to reset a password if that were the case. I mean, it's not that it's down all the time, but it goes down frequently enough that we had to be able to live with that. And you'll see in some of the design, there are pieces that aren't used yet that they'll be using in the future for some of the management and budgeting restrictions. Now, I'm not sure how I ended up with these as one item, but they need the local servers to be highly available. So those components we settled on was the IBM Tivoli Directory Server, which brings up a lot of groans, but it's I'll explain how we got there soon. And Samba 3.0, as shipped in, they're on Red Hat Enterprise Linux 3. And then we had to go a little bit beyond that and get a package called PyCoda for printing quota. They use the standard Linux HA Heartbeat suite of tools to do mirroring of disks on local servers. And packages you're familiar with, Squid, hopefully, and Identity to tell who's logged on. And then some web filtering and proxying packages. We'll get to them in a minute. So on the directory server, we didn't have a lot of choices, it turns out, in what we could use. They already have IBM WebSphere, which uses IBM SecureWay. And as they upgrade, the upgrade path will be to the IBM directory server that's included in the WebSphere package. Probably the biggest issue was this unreliable one. They needed to be able to have full control, or at least full access, or even write access to the local LDAP database, even when the network was down. So they couldn't really do an open LDAP replication slave server configuration. We explored the possibility of using open LDAP locally with the newest versions have a new way of syncing called SyncREPL, where the server will actually go actively try to connect. Instead of getting updates pushed down from SlurpD when open LDAP, SyncREPL will go and try to get things from the master servers. And the original reason for this was to be able to have replication across different directory products. So you could use open LDAP to replicate from anybody's directory. But they don't have all that implemented yet, so we really couldn't use that. So we just settled on IBM Tivoli Directory Server 5.2. The basic directory structure is they have this data center, which is the root of their open LDAP directory. And then different schools, for budgeting reasons, have these partnerships. They'll have 1 to 10 schools that pool some of their resources. And that is really just a logical grouping. They don't have any data center at that level. The actual machines reside at the school level. So all the management, the policy information that are used by Tivoli and WebSphere, the Tivoli management suite, are done at the data center. That's where they run all the Tivoli monitoring stuff. I mean, the monitoring clients are at the schools themselves, but all that stuff is managed from that central data center. As I mentioned, this partnership is just a logical division they use, and they currently don't have anything in place other than our directory that we've put in. They'll be using this to figure out quotas, maybe have one school that says, we've got some extra money in our budgets unused. We didn't have as many students, or we didn't print as many things. We'll give you our money for these printing jobs, and you give us money for your file shares. It'll just be for tracking purposes in the future. Most of the applications that we're running on these appliances are based right out of the schools, and they really don't need to know anything about what's going on above that level. So the thing about IBM Tivoli Directory Server that allowed all this to happen was the idea that you can replicate just a subtree of the directory. You don't have to have one big directory replicated everywhere. So here, in the end, we didn't want to have 400 schools that had to know about 300,000 users. So each school has just the tree for their school and replicates. It's a two-way replication. it can be done so that management tool, things like adding users can be done back at the data center, and the passwords can be reset locally, or the other applications that are running can log their changes locally on that directory that's just in that school. And that also enables them to have smaller hardware, because IBM Directory Server really does take a lot of power to run when you get up to that size. So the issue we ran into when setting up the server was that, well, here's this IBM Directory Server was designed as part of this WebSphere suite, and so they pulled it out, and some of the setup is just a little tough to get through. There's some bugs that we had to get resolved just in getting things set up, and it really, you know, it takes a lot of trial and error or training to get through that setup. We had to make some changes to our schemas because the schema format is just a little bit different. Not very different, but enough that you can go through and you know run a script and make the changes, make most of the changes, although some of the items had to be resolved by hand. And the big concern that I had, and they don't seem to have this concern, is that the replication that goes on here is not a multi-master replication. So let's say for some reason you reset your password locally, then you call up your admin and say, oh, I forgot my password. He resets the password. And for some strange reason, somebody, and you make a phone call, you get pissed off, you make a phone call back to the data center, and I can't get my password reset. And he resets the password too. There is no way in the IBM Directory Server currently that would be resolved. So those items would have to be resolved by hand. They don't believe that they'll run into this very often because they don't have the administrative tasks overlapping. So they don't need to be accessing all the same attributes from the data center and from the local schools. So we had to set up the access controls on an attribute basis, not just on an entry, but each attribute we had to say that these are the people that can update this one. And so that the local administrators don't go beyond what they're allowed to do, and so that the central data center folks can't do it either, can't step on the attributes that are managed locally. And they just have to have a policy in place to how do they resolve this when it does occur. I know this is Samba XP, but I don't have a whole lot to say about Samba in this deployment because it does what they want. They use the LDAP PassDB backend. They are unfortunately unable to take advantage of a lot of the improvements that Gunther and Volker made for the domain controllers that Gunther talked about yesterday because they are on the release that Red Hat ships. They support the logon via Samba and use the profiles and policies to lock down the desktops. All the things that you've seen Samba use to share before, nothing new here. So we had to make a few updates to the Samba schema to go into the IBM Directory Server, as I mentioned. An issue for them is that the IDLX tools are just necessary in this environment, or some kind of scripts. These are some nice prepackaged tools to use. They felt comfortable because we've had a pretty good relationship with IDLX folks, and we inform them if they have a problem, and they've been good about fixing them. And not having print quota support was a big issue for them because they're on a tight budget. They tell each student, you can print 10 pages of a semester, and you don't want to go over that. So we had to go outside of Samba to do that. As I mentioned, they can't always have the latest Samba. So we installed PyCoda, which is a Python-based print quota system that hooks into CUPS. And so since we're using CUPS to print, it handled this. It allows not just print quota, but all sorts of auditing and reporting that can be pulled out, that's stored in the directory that they can pull out with their Tivoli tools and any custom scripts they want to run. And it gets the printer info. They had a restriction. They had to use printers that can talk SNMP because that's how PyCoda gets the real information because CUPS only can give them so much information back about what really printed. The printer knows that it printed two pages. Cups thinks it printed two pages, but the printer is sure. So that was an important restriction for them. But again, Supply Coda is not supported by the standard IBM agreements, and the bottom line here was they had no choice, so they went with that. And some of the prerequisite software, some of the Python add-ons that needed to be put in or would not be supported as well. We had to get them to fix some schema incompatibilities, not just the format of it, but this particular matching rule had to be taken out of their schema because it's an open LDAP extension. It's not a standardized one, so IBM Directory Server didn't support it. It logged a little too much in LDAP, and that just caused way too much traffic. You know, in our test environment, it's not a problem, but if you put that scale that across 300 servers and 400,000 users, and you're going to have replication nightmare. And the problem, also another part of it that made us decide to go to this local, this peer replication, so we could do local work, is that we found that if the LDAP server was down, you simply couldn't print. It would just wait, try to connect to the printer, and you didn't print without quotas. You just didn't print. So we solved that by having the local server. But the PyCoda team was very responsive to the requests. I think, John, it was, I mean, within a day in most cases that they... Yes, IRC is good. they also have a requirement that's high availability. They can't really handle a server being down because then school is out. You know, there are classes that are taught that require that these servers be there. But they also can't afford to buy some shared, I almost said DASD as John did, disks. They'd rather just buy some fairly low-end hardware and duplicate it. So they use the MON and DRBD on Heartbeat packages to replicate, mirror everything. All their Samba shares and configuration and TDBs, and it's worked great for them. I think we had no problems the first time we tried it out. Bill, is that right? Sorry, Bill. I didn't realize you had gone back to sleep. And then some pieces of it, we didn't have to use this Linux HA because there's replication already there. IBM Directory Server has replication built in it. So not only did we have replication from a data center master server to a local server, we had replication, full peer replication, right to both of them, to two servers standing side by side in the school. So we didn't have to worry about that. And then their WebSense software would handle all of the replication to the individual servers in that software itself. So they use Squid. That's just to be able to basically help cache, speed up common websites that are hit. And one piece of software that they did have to install in the Windows clients was IDENTD. So that they could find it. It was an easy way that they could identify who was connecting from the Windows machine without having to add in another password or requiring Internet Explorer. This way they could use any browser they want, and IDENTD on the Windows machine knows who's logged on and will send that info when requested. Initially there was a pilot that went on last year that used SquidGuard to do their web content filtering, and it did all of the web filtering that they needed. It's a very flexible package, and there are public blacklists that are easily available they could download. But the problem that they had was they wanted to be able to manage this from the data center and send out requirements, say, we've got some new rules. We want to make sure that every school's got this because we're going to get in serious trouble if we find out that one of the schools didn't do this right. And they want to be able to, to have these whole slew of reports they could choose from and to be able to find out what was really going on. So they decided to go with WebSense. Conveniently, there's a WebSense development office right down the road, so those guys could come in and help out pretty easily. I've got all the same filtering, and the centralized policy management enables them to have to be sure that they can push out the changes they need to all the schools. They also want the schools to be able to have their own policies that they add on and extend the centralized one, which was not implemented in the current version of WebSense, but it will be later this year. So they've got around that by an external script that merges the files together after any updates are received from the data center. And then you put all this stuff together, and the average school, you know, in a lot of schools, there is no IT person. A lot of schools, just one of the teachers gets stuck with that job. It's the computer science teacher that gets stuck with that job, and he still has a full job to do, and he doesn't want to learn all these different tools that he has to use to manage things. So John Janosik went in and did a Webmin-based GUI for them to do some of the basic tasks they needed to do, that a simple administrator or teacher might need to do, to, you know, refresh caches, change, reset passwords for the students, and create shares on the fly. The data center, however, the folks in the data center are IT professionals, and so they didn't really want to spend more money on this part of it, I believe, so they just figure they'll learn how all this stuff works, which means they'll call us to find out. So currently, there is a three-school pilot in place. It covers about 2,000 users, and things are going pretty well on it. There's, you know, bumps in the road, as always. And right now, they're teaching the administrators, the data center administrators, how all this stuff works. Things that we are not so sure about. I mean, we're confident that IBM Directory Server can scale the 300,000 users of the data center. We make sure, you know, we got those folks involved, make sure they're at the right hardware to handle that number of users. And we know that the hardware they've got at the school level can handle this, you know, several hundred to a thousand number of users. But the big question is, when with all this peer replication going on, there is a lot of replication traffic that may end up happening. And what will happen if say, the network goes down right when a class starts, and six different classes at 40 different schools log on all at the same time, and whoops, it's 90 days after the first day of school, they all have to change their passwords. So they all change their passwords. And it's great, it all works for them locally, but what happens when the network comes back up? We don't know yet. What's going to happen when you have 400 servers trying to replicate back up all of a sudden, and will that take the network down? So that is an outstanding question. So feel free to look over the network diagram, and if you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer them. Yes? Okay, so the question is, why did we use IDENTD with SQID instead of NTLM or native LDAP authentication? And the reason is because we wanted them to be able to do it without having to enter a password. If you use NTLM, it'll work fine if you've got everything configured right and you're using Internet Explorer. But if you go and use Mozilla doesn't know what password you logged on with, and it's gonna have to end up asking you for a password, and they didn't want that. How are the policies distributed to the workstations? They are done through John's probably a better person to answer this question, but most of the stuff is done in the user policies when they log on. So they just have to put them in the Samba share in the net log on. Some of the policies have to be done at install time on Windows, yes, and some of that is done through Tivoli, the IBM Tivoli software that will distribute those policies through the Tivoli management suite. And then the user policies can then be done simply by accessing the Samba shares. That's a process. Pushing those down would then have to be done. It's a little more work, but Tivoli can be customized to do that too.
How would the teachers locate
I'll let John handle that one because John is the one who's did that part. Yeah, so their requirements are fairly simple. Usually it's, you know, it's the class, who in the class can read and write. That's about it. Yes. Sorry, second. Yes. Yes. There was one over here, sorry.
Do you have any naming conventions for the accounts?
Are there any naming conventions for the accounts?
We have a lot of users.
Yes, that's not something that I know about. That is something that's really only, so it's really only their business, and so I haven't, so I can't answer that question. Do you know the answer to that?
Are they doing printing through IPP or through Samba?
They are doing printing through Samba.
Ah. So if they're at a quota, what error messages do they get back? I'm not sure. Do we filter the correct error message all the way back?
Do you know, John? Have you seen that when the quota? Okay, so use an SMB client.
So we're using SMB client to send pop-ups back. They decided to enable Messenger on all their Windows clients. But also it can send emails as well. Right. So they're doing both. Both administrators will have a shared email ID where they'll get messages. So they get, like, primary students are not going to have email. So the administrators will have to go talk to the primary students.
To Pacoda, is there any way to get started with Pacoda without SNMP on the printer?
Yes, there are some things you can get back through whatever comes through CUPS. If it's an AppleTalk printer, it can use AppleTalk. Do you know of any other ways to get? But for example, if you have a printer that's got some kind of driver that on Windows is not a properly behaved Windows driver, and there are a lot of those out there, you're really not going to have much chance to find out what it is. But you know, in a case like this, you can put some requirements that they have at least a minimum level of a decent printer.
Yeah, I was actually wondering if there is a native support for printing quota in Windows in general. Does it exist? So it's a feature that might possibly be added, implemented later. Does something like this exist in Windows?
You know, and from someone who came from IBM Printing Systems, we did everything we could to avoid the operating system's quotas, and we always managed our own. So I honestly don't know the answer to that. And I see a lot of unsure looks around the room. I think someone up here, Tom, had a question.
Is it possible to get your Webmin module to have a look at it? Because it's interesting for us to have it for first level support. For us, it is interesting to get information about the file group and user handling. Is it possible to do it without any Explorer tool from Windows, only with Webmin?
Okay, well, in terms of getting access to that, we'll have to talk afterwards. I'll give you my card, and we'll try to get you in touch with the account team because it's done specifically for an IBM account. And some accounts are very, very willing to share, and some accounts are not. So it will depend completely on the customer.
Okay.
So.
Is there another question? Okay, then thanks again, or thanks the first time. I think we had an interesting morning. Now there's a break until 1:20. We have lunch and see you later then.